Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Deborah's Healing Kitchen once again. I am Deborah Peek Haynes, and I am excited today to have a fabulous doctor with us. And Dr. Aaron Horn is not just a good doctor, he is a good man. And we had the privilege of actually presenting together at a workshop, I guess it was within the last 2 years, and it was extremely well received. Dr. Horn gave great information. He is a cardiologist, and I think one of the best in this area of the country, if not one of the best in the country. And I am just so excited about what he's going to share about what he does and what we need to know so we can have a healthier cardiovascular system. Dr. Horn, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you mind just giving us a quick summary of your background? And then I have some questions I would like to ask you.
My pleasure. So, again, my name is Aaron Horn, Jr. I'm an interventional cardiologist in the Dallas-Fort Worth area here in Texas. I'm originally from a northern suburb of Chicago, Evanston, where Northwestern is located, and did the majority of my education actually at the University of Chicago. I subsequently did my residency in New York at Columbia University, and then did my general cardiology, interventional cardiology, and structural heart training at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. You know, it's truly serendipitous that I happen to be where I am at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be one of the first people, one of the first interventional cardiologists in the country trained in doing a less invasive procedure to fix the aortic valve, which is one of the main points that I'd like to bring to your audience today. One of the, I think, things that we should all be very excited about is that the fastest growing population in the United States are people 85 years of age and older.
Wow.
And the aortic stenosis is a disease of aging. So the heart has a left and a right side and a top and a bottom, and it's separated by valves. So the aortic valve is the valve that lets blood leave the main pumping chamber of your heart and go to your brain and all of your vital organs. As we get older, that valve starts to narrow. And if that valve narrows too much, then blood can't leave the heart pumping mechanism, and blood goes back into your lungs and causes you to have chest pain, shortness of breath, and pass out. And most importantly, untreated, there is a 2-year mortality of 75%. So why am I so emphatic about this particular disease process? I stated that the fastest growing population in the United States are people 85 years of age and older. I noted that aortic stenosis is, in fact, a disease of aging.
Mm-hmm.
Between 26 and 29% of people 65 years of age and older has aortic stenosis, and 1 out of every 8 people 75 years of age and older has moderate to severe aortic stenosis. So when I actually left my training, I started to familiarize myself with the literature on this topic, and it really struck me that in the United States, only 3.8% of African Americans are actually getting this technology.
Mm.
So
mm.
It has been my mission to make sure that I do a better job of communicating this disease process to not only patients, but also to providers, and ensure health equity as it pertains to this particular disease state, since it seems particularly important at this period of time when we have such an aging population. So again, thank you for providing a platform for me to share what I think is this very important message, and I just want to commend you for your continued work in health advocacy, and you know, look forward to this continued dialogue.
Well, thank you for, you know, opening us with the conversation about that, because I just learned something about the population of people 85 and older and how fast that is growing. But one of the things that I really appreciated about you is what you said earlier. You're into intervention. So we have to take care of it on the front end, and also we have to look at, okay, on the back end, you know, if some things happen, or as we get older, what are the types of things we need to look for? So in your intervention, could you kind of talk a little bit about that? Because we've had conversation, and you shared with, you know, people here at our church during the workshop about the importance of exercise and eating and how that impacts the body. Particularly as we age, we need to take better care of our temples. So can you talk a little bit more about the intervention? And then I want to shift the conversation to talk about what you think we need to be doing as we are aging.
Absolutely. So you're right. I am an interventional cardiologist, which means that when patients are in their most severe, most critical cardiovascular state, when people are having a heart attack, I come in and hopefully in many instances put in balloons and stents in order to relieve any obstruction that's preventing blood to get to your heart muscle. However, outside of genetics, the majority of those presentations are self-inflicted. And, you know, we obviously both come from a spiritual background, and I often use the phrase that Shirley Caesar used, which is the church should be in mourning because there's so much more that we can do to prevent ourselves from being in these situations. We know that tobacco use is a killer. It not only increases one's chance of having a heart attack, but it also increases one's chance of having a stroke and decreased blood supply to your legs and ultimately could result in amputation. We know that diabetes is a deadly killer. It's a cardiovascular risk equivalent. We know that metabolic syndrome, which is really, there are criteria from which you can get that definition or that description or that label. However, most importantly, refers to, this is right down the advocacy that you do, is one's waist circumference. Once you know that you actually, as a man, have a waist circumference of greater than 40 centimeters, then you're at increased risk for diabetes and increased risk of cardiovascular events. So while I obviously am grateful to have been trained so that I can treat our patients when they are in their most critical states, my main goal is to prevent them from getting to that space. So it's really important that we don't take lightly, the low-hanging fruit, which is the ABCs, making sure that you actually have good blood pressure control, you have good glycemic control, meaning that you're keeping your blood sugar in line. If you are diabetic, you're paying attention to your cholesterol levels, you're staying away from toxins, environmental toxins such as tobacco use, because all of those things actually are so important. Because once you go down that path of needing balloons and stents, and obviously if we need those, then we're grateful that we are able to do those technologies, and we oftentimes have great outcomes, but then you also then have to be on certain medications long-term, and there's costs associated with that. And so I spend the majority of my time trying to educate patients about the importance of preventive cardiovascular care. And the reality is there's a certain amount of personal responsibility that we have to take as patients and help prevent us from getting into those more acute, critical situations.
Right. And I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I always say to people, you're responsible for your health. You know, your doctor is supposed to be a partner in that, but it's your responsibility. You have to ask questions. What do you do on a daily basis? How are you taking care of yourself? And one of the other things that I really do appreciate about you, you know, I've seen you in action. And I remember something that you said. You were talking about what we tell ourselves, and as we age, you know, we buy into we have to be sick or we have to be broken down, but you are very affirming that we need to tell ourselves, no, we don't have to be this way. We just have to do what it takes so we can live a healthier lifestyle. So what are some of the things you say to patients that are maybe ill, but you want to give them hope?
Absolutely. That's really the critical point that you just made. My grandfather was an AME minister, and he used to always say 40. And so I think that many of us were raised in a generation in which we believe that if we have lived 70 years, then God is gracious with that, and we should be comfortable moving on. And I would just like to challenge all of us to consider that God has, in fact, blessed all of us in different ways, in which in my particular instance has been permitting me to have certain exposures within cardiovascular medicine to learn novel techniques to help us to be able to enjoy an ideal quality of life. We're not just talking about quantity of life here. We're talking about quality of life. And so what I would urge us to do is when we actually are starting to slow down a little bit, don't just assume that it's because it's the end of the road, but the most important thing that you can do is to have an effective effective two-way communication stream with your provider. And I challenge everybody, if you don't have that, then you need to ask somebody for a second opinion, because
right.
you are, in fact, a consumer as a patient. And that day of just going and just doing whatever the doctor says is behind us, right? It's important that we ask questions and that we are our own biggest advocates, right? There might be instances in which there aren't any other medications or any other treatments that would be necessary to prolong one's quantity of life while preserving their quality of life. However, by golly, we deserve that information. I think that we need to do a better job as a medical community, and we're getting there in terms of shared decision-making, which is trusting the not only intelligence but the wherewithal of our patients to be able to make decisions that are best for them. And so, you know, when you're having leg pain, don't just assume that it's osteoarthritis. I get on my wife about this. You know, we got to stop being WebMD. You know,
mm-hmm.
people like me are in this position for a reason. Don't just assume that that, you know, discomfort in your chest was just heartburn, so you took some Tums and then presented 5-7 days later and things are worse. It's important that we don't just assume that shortness of breath is just because you're getting overweight. It might be that heart valve. And so I do think that we need to do, especially in the Black community, do a better job of being proactive about asking questions and then asking as many questions as you can until you get the answer that's helping you wrap your head around the particular condition in which you're enduring. And so we do have to obviously take some self-responsibility and make sure that we're eating the right way. And what do I mean by that? And people know this. You should not put any table salt on your food once it's after it's been prepared. We know
mm-hmm.
that we need to stay away from polyunsaturated fats. We know that we need to exercise for 30 minutes, 5 to 6 days a week. Okay, these are all things that aren't only they're going to make you feel better and obviously help us, I think, have not only a longer life but a better life.
Well, thank you. That's very rich. That information is very, very rich. And so now what has been your recent conversation or experience with African-American women? Because we know we tend to die of heart disease quicker than anyone else. So have you seen an uptick in, you know, Black women coming to you, wanting help, wanting to make sure that they are heart healthy? So has there been any changes in that?
Right. So, you know, I think that it's a great point that you bring up. And if I can just sort of frame this discussion, hopefully for your audience, women in general are the people that are least aggressively treated as it pertains to the management of their potential coronary artery disease, right?
Mm.
If somebody comes into the emergency room with chest pain and they are a white male, they are automatically going to be treated most aggressively for a presumed myocardial infarction, heart attack, and presumably taken to the catheterization lab and treated with balloons and stents if possible, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you might be interested to know that Black men actually are most aggressively treated subsequent to them, and then women. Women's
wow.
symptoms are oftentimes thought to be something other than cardiac in origin. And part of that is because their presentations might be different. It might not be an elephant sitting on your chest type of squeezing sensation, but it might be a jaw discomfort. It might be a tingling sensation that's running down one's arm. It might be shortness of breath, right? And so there's a learning curve, and there is afoot, I think, a big educational initiative in making sure that we are aware of the fact that women actually present differently. And so I really encourage, again, our end users, our patients, our consumers, being advocates for themselves and saying, and you know your body. So, you know, it's important that when you go to the hospital and they do some blood work and they say, well, everything looks okay, don't just say, okay, well, I'm fine with that. I'll just go home. If you know in your mind and in your body that something's not right. You
right.
need to make sure that you speak up and advocate for yourself, because there are different disease states other than just, and obviously, as you can imagine, cardiovascular disease is a big, broad umbrella. And so it's not just heart attacks and having decreased blood supply to your heart muscle, but there's other disease states where sometimes the smaller vessels that might not need balloons and stents aren't getting adequate oxygenation, and there's other ways in which we can treat those things. So it's really important, and especially in all communities, but in the Black community in particular, where, you know, women really still continue to be the matriarch and are involved in the multi-generational rearing of our families. And so, you know, they always say when you get on an airplane, if something goes wrong, you put the oxygen mask over your face first before you put it on your child. So
right.
It's important that women in particular in the African-American community take time to tend to their own health first and foremost so that they can continue to be the matriarchs that we count on them to be.
Right, right. I so agree with that. You know, I had a in a previous interview with a vegan nutritionist chef, we talked a lot about hydration. And so I'm curious, do you find that you have a harder time convincing, you know, black people that, you know, we need to drink water, or is there any type of differences in the patients that you see? Because I'm always, and I have to look at myself and say, okay, you know, how much have I had today? I need to make sure I wake up in the morning and I drink, you know, 8 ounces of water to start my day. But, you know, do you have to convince us more than others we need to drink water? And so many of us are dehydrated.
No, it's a great point, and I think that you're absolutely right. The one thing that, again, I think one of the take-home messages is for anybody that's listening, if you don't have a provider, please get one. Because you know, especially within the African-American community, we do have accelerated rates of hypertension and chronic kidney disease. And the reason why that's pertinent as it pertains to your inquiry regarding hydration, there are certain instances in which if the heart pumping function isn't normal, too much volume can increase one risk of going into acute episode of shortness of breath at times secondary to congestive heart failure. So, you know, all things remaining equal, obviously, if you are a relatively healthy person without otherwise diagnosed structural heart disease, then obviously hydration is of critical importance. But however, it is important that you're aware of what other diagnoses that you have, because in those instances, fluid balance is very important. It's important that that type of regimen is tailored with your respective provider.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good. Well, going back to your initial introduction, explaining the types of procedures that are available to people that are over 85 or as we age, those of us that might, you know, have cardiac issues and our cardiovascular system maybe is not as healthy, what type of questions should we ask moving forward when we find ourselves in those positions as far as the type of treatment that's available to us? Because I think sometimes we don't even know the questions to ask when we know that we are having, you know, issues with our cardiovascular system.
Right. And so this is such a, you know, layered, the response to this is really multifactorial, and it's complicated, but thankfully we have people such as you who are helping us try to find answers and solutions. The point that I was trying to make earlier about the aortic valve disease pathology was that in this older, obviously in some instances more frail patient population, the procedure that I do is less invasive. So historically, the only way you could fix that aortic valve was by opening up the chest. However, now in certain instances, we can do it through an IV in the artery and the groin, and that's the reason why those procedures are particularly beneficial in older patient populations. And so the reason why I say it's a very complicated question is because depending on where you get your care, those procedures might not be offered. And that was the reason that brought me to Dallas, Texas, because I came to a hospital system that had a very diverse patient population that it treated. However, they did not offer that particular technology to its patients.
Wow.
And so it's very important that in terms of the symptoms as you get older, chest pain, shortness of breath, lightheadedness, dizziness, those are all symptoms of aortic stenosis. Some of those obviously have overlap with symptoms as it pertains to heart disease and myocardial infarction as well. And so I think that the question that I would ask your audience to entertain is that whether or not there are less invasive methods to treat my particular cardiac condition, and are there procedures that potentially are offered at other facilities if they aren't offered at yours, right? Because if you can imagine, and I don't think that it's the provider doing anything wrong, if they're great at what they do and that's the only thing that they do in that environment, they offer you that. However, again, as a consumer, you deserve to not have to be a victim of information asymmetry. So that's my goal, to make sure that patients can have access access to all of the information so that they can be an informed consumer and make informed decisions.
Wow, that is awesome. That is really, really great. I mean, you've given us such a wealth of knowledge, and I really appreciate that, you know, you came here because you saw a need. And, you know, I know you have already been a blessing to so many. I have, of course, referred you to people. And one of the things that I think that you possess, and, you know, there's other very educated doctors that have great skills, but for me, there needs to be a really great bedside manner, a great spirit, because there is a connection. And I know, you know, as an African-American woman, if I don't like you, it's going to be hard for me to listen to what you have to say. So I think it's important that we seek providers like you that have a really good way of connecting with the humanity in a person. There's a lot of times, you know, I've come across people that have doctors, but they do not connect to their humanity in their patients, and so the patients don't get the kind of care that they really need and deserve. So thank you for your humanity and your connection to people. Thank you for, you know, what you've learned that you're bringing back to the community. I think that's just, you know, really, really awesome. So I'm always praying that you remain healthy and you're able to, you know, move forward. And I've said this on many occasions to our Black brothers, you know, once many of our Black brothers get to a certain level of success in life, then they die, and then they're not here to mentor so many coming after them. So I think what you're doing is helping so many live well longer, and that's just really, really important for our community. So is there anything else you would like to share before we close this conversation? And then I would like for you to also give us information on how people can get in contact with you, you know, in your practice.
Well, thank you for the kind words. Obviously, you know, have tremendous amount of respect for you and all of the hard work that you and obviously your husband continue to do in our community. My main take-home points are, please, don't fall victim to being and playing WebMD. Take your health seriously, okay? There is a certain amount of personal responsibility that we have to accept. And mm-hmm. I understand we're all very busy, but you got to take time to take care of yourself first. So we can all eat better. And for those that smoke tobacco, I guess you guys just must be very wealthy, because my understanding is that they're very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Save that money
right.
and put it towards your
right.
kid's college fund.
Right.
But make sure that you are developing a good relationship with your provider. And if you don't have a good relationship with your provider, then find one that you do. Okay, and don't just assume that you slowing down is just a byproduct of aging. It might be something that's correctable. And, you know, the reality is that it's a blessing that we're an aging population. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, because, as you know, and you've been very welcoming to the fact that I have a young family. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, having generations evolved in the rearing of our children, meaning having grandparents evolved and to the degree that's possible, great-grandparents evolved, that just enriches the life of our children. So we have to do what we have to do as it pertains to our health to keep our families and our community intact. I am in practice in Dallas and in the mid-cities, have offices in Arlington and North Richland Hills. I work with the HCA Corporation. I can be reached at 214-937-9198. Again, 214-937-9198. Really appreciate the platform, and just want to encourage your listeners to be engaged and be encouraged, because
mm-hmm.
I think the best is still in front of us.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Aaron Horn, Jr., and I hope that I can grab a few more moments from you in the near future to come back and share with us again. But thanks so much for taking the time out of your schedule. I pray that your family continues to do well as you and your wife do so many great things together. And so thank you all who have listened to this awesome interview with Dr. Aaron Horn. And if you want more information about Deborah's Healing Kitchen, please go to my Facebook page, Deborah's Healing Kitchen. And I would love to hear from you. I would love to get your email address. So please go to www.deborahpeakhaines.com. give me your information. We will have new and exciting things coming up in the near future, so I need to get in contact with you if you are interested in Deborah's Healing Kitchen. Thanks again for listening, and look forward to our next session.